It's a popular joke among older generations that it's a good thing there was no social media when they were younger, so that their youthful indiscretions and badly aged opinions can't color or distract how they present themselves today. Indeed, it seems that the current kids are among the first generations to have almost their entire lives logged and recorded, every comment searchable, and forever tied to every shitpost they ever sent, a circumstance seemingly unique to the modern world. Except it's not. The past may not have had on-demand telecommunications, social media, always-on streaming news services, or cameras capturing literally every angle of our daily lives. They did have meticulously kept records of what was produced by the literate classes, and if you could afford an education, pen and paper, or in most cases, quill and parchment, chances are you wrote simply mountains of personal correspondence, some of which survive to this day. Case in point, we have Joan of Arc's hate mail. To clarify, that is the hate mail St. Joan sent, not the hate mail she received. Bienvenue à Histoire! While allegedly illiterate herself, accounts vary as to the standard of her education, after her rise to military power and notoriety, she had access and use of the scribes and scholars of the Royal French Court of the Dauphin, who she would dictate her correspondence to, and then read to her the eventual replies. While by no means the lowly peasant she is sometimes made out to be, her father supplemented the family income as a part-time tax collector in the town of Domremy. Growing up in rural Europe during the 15th century, Joan herself enjoyed no sort of formal education, expectations for her amounting to marrying well, at best, relatively speaking for the daughter of a part-time shire-reeve. That all changed in 1428, when she successfully petitioned a local garrison commander for a military escort to Chinon, allegedly on marching orders from the heavenly host itself, to single-handedly lead the French forces to total victory. Baudricourt, naturally, first told her to piss off, and she did, returning the next year to ask once again, this time armed with a bit of juicy gossip about a recent battle she shouldn't really have even known happened in the first place. Suitably impressed, Baudricourt sent her along with two of his soldiers, giving her men's clothing to wear during the journey for her own protection. A spot of cross-dressing that within 3 years would lead to her execution. Arriving at court, Joan was quickly given everything she demanded from King Charles, whose own forces and entire state and government structure was on the verge of complete collapse, with seemingly no hope against the English war machine, not to mention still weak from a disastrous civil war the decade before. The extent to which the French were well and truly boned could be seen in their absolute lack of hesitation in armoring up this then 17-year-old spinster and sticking her at the head of their vanguard. You don't do that unless you are so arrogantly sure that she will crush your enemies that her presence is merely a tactic meant to distract and offend, or if you have absolutely no hope whatsoever and don't mind sacrificing some podunk rural kid on the off chance that that's what Jesus wanted. Which, as it turned out, with each victory with Joan at the head, her legend grew and spread, fed by the medieval mind. To the French, she seemed a literal gift from the heavens, sent to righteously retake France and bring divine justice to the wicked English and their allies. To the English, a charlatan, a novelty, a curiosity, and the most potentially dangerous enemy in Europe. One that could spread doubt among the soldiers, and the nagging, gnawing idea that God very specifically was not on your side. So Joan had some clout, and was not at all afraid to swing that big sword of hers around, and not just on the battlefield. With the ear of the King of France and the fascinated eye of Christendom watching, Joan soon took to letting everyone know what she thought of them, and what they should do, and sometimes what she intended to do to them. Her most famous correspondence, the First Letter to the English, written in March of 1429, is possibly the most well-known threat ever uttered in the entire history of Anglo-French relations. Promising to wipe out every Englishman who stood against her, personally, until every city, fort, and town the English had violated was in her hands. When the first letter didn't elicit any decent response, she doubled down in the second, making it clear that all she wanted to do was mess their day up. By the time the third letter arrived via Arrow, the English had resorted to just trash-talking her, replying that she was a harlot. In November 1429, Joan got into a petty rivalry with another Saint Whisperer, Catherine de la Rochelle, a fundraiser for King Charles. Joan believed Catherine to be a spiritual fraud, and made sure everyone in their immediate social circle knew it. Since they both claimed to talk to the Holy Dead, that social circle included Saints Margaret and Catherine, who, according to a letter Joan wrote to the king, told Joan that de la Rochelle was total bullshit. Not yet satisfied, Joan arranged to sleep with Catherine, so that she could witness her speaking with saints with her own eyes. Catherine lasted 2 nights before admitting that Joan was right. In March of 1430, Joan went absolutely ballistic over a religious sect, the Hussites, who lived in Bohemia. To the modern post-Reformation eye, just what separated the Hussites from the Catholics can be a little different to determine, mostly coming down to finer details of transubstantiation. But to Joan, it was a knockdown, drag-out fight of the century. Exhibiting all the classic signs of a shitpost, Joan first railed against them as heretics, accusing them of every possible crime she could conceive of. She pointed out that had she not been busy with the English, she would have already moseyed on over to Bohemia and slaughtered them all. And then, for good measure, assured them that after she conquered perfidious Albion, she'd be coming for their heads next. Curiously, this was all written during a truce between the French and the English that clearly bored the hell out of Joan. To the point she even reached out to her sworn enemies, looking to team up against the Hussites, the better to brutally crush them. 2 months to the day of the letter, though, she was captured by Burgundian forces at the Battle of Compiègne, and so never got to brutally repress the Czech rebels, who continue to peacefully exist to this day. Joan wasn't quite so lucky. She was subjected to a religious show trial in Rouen, run by the English with a single goal in mind: execute Joan of Arc. This was tricky since technically she was to be tried by the church, but a few well-placed threats against the lives of various clergy saw the whole thing handed over to Anglo hands. After seemingly endless rounds of questioning, cross-examination, and a mountain of evidence, only some of which was blatantly fake, the illiterate Joan was forced to sign a confession, officially declaring her to be a heretic. The thing about heresy, though, was that's not what got you killed. Indeed, many people have been found guilty of heresy throughout the history of Christendom, and went on to lead full and successful lives. What got you killed was recidivism, that is, returning to your allegedly heretical behavior. The English made sure Joan would eventually slip by locking her in a prison with male guards, who had a tendency to threaten, if not follow through, on raping her. They then conveniently left a pair of trousers in her cell and waited for Joan to put two and two together herself, at which point they declared her guilty of breaking her holy parole by cross-dressing, and started gathering the wood for a public burning. Interestingly, many of the letters and witnesses to correspondence survive to this day because they were not only involved in her trial, but were elements of the Crown's evidence against her. Even more interestingly, those court documents were then used as proof that she had been railroaded, and helped land her that posthumous promotion to sainthood herself in the 20th century. The 19-year-old maiden of Orléans was executed on May 30th, 1431. Her body burned 3 times to destroy any trace of her, in an act that the executioner himself believed had resigned him to hell's own fires. As it turned out, he wasn't the only one stuck with a guilty conscience over the whole affair. Thanks to the turning tide of the war, public opinion around the increasingly mythologized Joan, and the persistent lobbying of her own mother, the church retried Joan in the 1450s, this time free from English interference. Over 3 years, scholars and priests meticulously went through the trial evidence and Catholic dogma. Even the proven charge of cross-dressing was re-examined, since church teachings from no less than Thomas Aquinas himself had previously argued that there was nothing wrong with cross-dressing in self-defense, such as when traveling through a war-torn countryside or in a foreign prison manned by rapists. The retrial not only found her innocent of all charges, declaring her a martyr for her faith, but then went on to convict the pro-English church official who had presided over the original trial to be guilty of heresy himself, resulting in his posthumous excommunication by the Pope. The church even commissioned a religious play in her honor in the 1450s that had the bonus of giving the attendees one free indulgence of their choosing. The trial and execution of Joan of Arc was handled so badly, everyone else got a voucher for one free sin with proof of purchase. Joan of Arc's hate mail. Worth every word.